Hello, I'm Andrew Jupin.
Eric Siska.
Chris Gabin.
And we hate movies. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the program. Thank you for tuning in, as always. Welcome to the third week of our third ever Summer Blockbuster Extravaganza, SBE3. Hashtag SBE3, by the way. We set that up last week on Steel. Let's see if we can keep that going. This week, have we tackled a Michael Bay movie before? Are we popping the Bay cherry?
I think we discussed him a little bit in Twister. Well, no, not Twister, in Deep Impact, because we were comparing.
Right. The comparison to
but
Armageddon.
I don't think we've actually touched down on a Michael Bay project yet.
Well, here we are. I honestly think there's no better place to start than a sequel of some kind. 2003's Bad Boys 2.
No, actually, it's Bad Boys 2.5 hours. That's how goddamn long this is.
Bruce Valanche, everybody. I mean, it is. Yeah, we can start right there. It is unnecessarily long.
It's an epic. It's an epic of Miami.
Miami. The Miami saga. Why can no one pronounce shit correctly in this movie? That Joe Pantoliano can't say feng shui properly.
Because it's funny.
It's funny making fun of silly words that other cultures have.
People will love it. It's an action comedy.
I mean, everybody has trouble saying those words, right? No, nobody does, actually.
So, Bad Boys 2, it's several years after the first Bad Boys. That was like back in the 90s. You know, when you could have action buddy cop comedy things.
It's like 97, 98.
I think it's 95, actually.
Really?
It's a long time ago.
Oh, okay. Because, like... And I'll say this, Michael Bay in the 90s, I'm on board.
Uh-huh.
Bad Boys, I think it's a good movie. I think it's a good cop movie. I love The Rock.
Rock is one of my favorite action movies of all time.
And I forgive Armageddon most of its trespasses. I shouldn't, and I certainly cringe at the bad parts more than I would cringe at almost anything else. But I kind of give it a pass because after that, it got really stupid.
So, Oh, go ahead.
Oh, well, not only that, but like Armageddon, you had Deep Impact fresh in your mind.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
So you're like, oh, yeah, it's better.
Yeah, we went over this before, but like you put Michael Clark Duncan in something. If you comparison shopping, Michael Clark Duncan's always what I'm going for.
So just going to go to the old IMDb here, check out this filmography a little bit. Also, this is him going back to his baby. Bad Boys was his first huge movie.
Right, before that he did music videos, right?
Music videos, and I think there's a feature called like Play That Funky Music from 1990, which I don't think anyone saw. Maybe we should fucking check the WHM archives for that shit.
Yeah.
So it was Bad Boys. Yeah, it was 95. Then you had The Rock, which is it's a truly excellent action movie. Armageddon, which, whatever. It's watchable, shitty, disaster movie nonsense. Then you had Pearl Harbor.
Oh, my God.
That's where it happened.
Speaking of epics.
Worse than the actual Pearl Harbor. I'll go on record.
Some, 85-year-old man just spit his teeth out in his oatmeal.
Well, because
our octogenarian We Hate Movies fans.
Thank you for your service, sir.
Well, because that's actually, I just called this a Michael Bay epic. That is an epic because that movie is like 4 hours long or some shit.
Oh my God.
It's like 3.5 hours. I remember I was hungover one day and I sat there and watched it. I saw it my little iPad stand here. Anyway.
I ended up seeing that in theaters.
Really? That's a long time to be at the movies.
Yeah, it was towards a phase where I wanted to be left alone.
And you liked air conditioning.
Yeah.
Lots of air conditioning.
All that air conditioning.
I grew up without air conditioning, so going to the movie theater was a big, big treat.
A big to-do.
Yeah.
And then, then this happens. Bad Boys 3.
Bad Boys
2. 2, excuse me, in 2003, pardon.
Getting a little excited for that third one, huh?
Yeah. And then you got The Island from 2005. Ooh,
I haven't seen it.
It's terrible.
Doggy.
Oh, really?
Is that a bad one?
And then he's just been doing Transformer movies and then Pain and Gain.
And then there's more Transformers on the way.
And more Bad Boys on the way.
I guess we're doing another Bad Boys. He's also obviously a big producer. I'm not going to read his whole fucking filmography.
Well, you definitely shouldn't. I'm actually kind of pissed that I haven't seen Pain and Gain for this because I hear such good things.
I've heard really positive things
about
Pain and Gain.
I've heard bad things,
too. Oh, really? Oh, good. All right. So I think it's, not all hope is lost.
Yeah, it may be bad. It may not. But, you know, I know you guys were defending Bad Boys a little bit earlier, but I never saw Bad Boys, and I never saw Bad Boys 2 until now. And I've been doing these rewatch things. Like I watched all those Maniac Cop movies for the first time.
Right, get a feel of the franchise.
Yeah, I'm like, I need to know where we're going.
Yeah,
you know. And then I tried to watch Bad Boys. I got 30 minutes in, and I was like, let me stick to what I gotta watch.
let me stick to the obligations, if you please.
Because you know some of that banter.
I mean, it's all the banter. But
if you can't get on board with the banter, you're going to turn it off after 30 minutes.
Yeah,
unless
exactly.
You're watching it for an episode of We Hate Movies.
And in the 90s, oh man, did we love banter.
Oh, we loved just running our little mouths, didn't we?
Yeah. So,
Taya Leone, she didn't like cruise you through there a little bit?
No.
Because that's what I always... Her and Checky Cario as the vaguely French villain...
The vaguely French so-and-so, Checky Cario, from, of course, Addicted to Love. Go back and check that out. Yeah.
So in this one, with Bad Boys 2, though,
it's another foreign villain.
Yeah, it's another foreign villain.
We hate foreigners.
A Cuban man named Johnny Tapia.
Yes, another foreign villain, Johnny Tapia.
Johnny Tapia, and he is an ecstasy dealer in Miami.
Yep, and that's, you know, then you're stuck paying attention to club culture and all sorts of crap that nobody could possibly be interested in.
Peter Stormare as a fucking Russian gangster, and like, man, he just took that Fargo thing and just was like fucking just wiping his ass with it,
well,
right?
You got to understand, you know, he's going back to, Michael, my friend from Armageddon, because I was in that movie too on the Mir space station.
And he was a Russian in that too.
I want to say, where is he actually from is the question at hand here. Because he's playing Alexei in this movie.
German?
He's Swedish.
Oh, Swedish.
He's Swedish. So, you know, I guess if you can do the accent convincingly enough, I mean, whatever.
If you can drink vodka and like act like a kind of a scumbag, you can do Russian.
Whoa, I can do Russian?
Yeah.
Nice. So we start this movie, by the way... It's a ridiculous, like, this is how you manufacture drugs montage, like, over the credits.
Yeah.
It's like a factory with, like, all the ecstasy pills being made
Happy
and everything.
Factory.
And it's, of course, it's playing, like, club-type music, but I'm just picturing that old traditional factory, like, making ecstasy.
Charlie Chaplin's getting stuck in gears.
While he's putting holes in his brain and draining his spinal fluid. There's a ridiculous... The only reason I brought up the opening credits, it has nothing to do with the movie, except for one credit that sticks out like a sore thumb. And check this shit out. Executive music consultant Sean P. Diddy Combs. Now, I put this out to the room. What did he have to do? What was his job on this movie?
He was handed a CD and said, that's fine. And then that's it.
He didn't even listen to it. What music do you think we should put in this movie?
He does the big song for the movie, which plays like four or five times to Shake Your Tail Feathers.
Oh, that's a P. Diddy song?
It's a P. Diddy. Is
he rapping on it?
Yeah, it's him and Nelly and somebody else. And like, it's the last time anybody saw Nelly. So, hey, good.
Around that time where they kept on trying to do like those super raps. Like, let's get 30 people featuring everyone.
Yeah. It was like, you know, We Are the World, but just solely with the hip hop community.
Yeah.
How many people can we squeeze onto one track?
We're gonna get Wu-Tang and Organized Confusion together with P. Diddy. No, that would never happen.
By the way, contrary to popular belief, this is not going to be the 2 months of P. Diddy movies. I know we talked about it, Godzilla, but
well, I mean, he's here, and like the thing is he is part. He is definitely part of the problem because some of these scenes, there's just like this really shitty, like no effort whatsoever, like beat going on in the background,
yeah.
And like it's supposed to be like a jumpy, happy little thing,
uh-huh.
And that with Will Smith and fucking Martin Lawrence with their goddamn banter. And it's just too much.
Well, it's way too much.
You know why that's there, right? Is they played part of it for P. Diddy, and he said, yeah, that's a good beat. And then they're like, do you think it belongs in this movie? It's a good beat. And then that's it. And
then he got a check for $1 million.
That's how
that works. So this movie starts off with a little bit of a drug deal. We see how the system is going down. We got coffins that's bringing money and drugs all over the place in, you know, this poor city of Miami. And that's basically the setup. And the sting operation with all of this is so goddamn ridiculous. So led by Henry Rollins, which, you know, when I see Henry Rollins in a movie, I'm like, all right, it's fine. Yeah. I'm okay with this.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, his spoken word stuff I think is totally fine. I'm not going to really seek it out if it's around, whatever.
I like the Rollins Band. I like Black Flag. So, I'm behind you, whatever you're doing.
He's totally entertaining and fine.
He's been in a bunch of stuff. What was it? The Chase with Charlie Sheen?
Oh, yeah, he's in The Chase.
He is in The Chase. Stay tuned. Yeah, holy shit.
Strap in and stay tuned. Jesus Christ.
I mean, Dalton Voss's daughter.
It's this whole sting, and what we follow along here is there's the drug handoff, and it goes to the delivery at a Klan rally.
On this island?
I don't know what's going on here.
You know, the Ku Klux Klan, it might not be known best for their club scene.
I can understand if this movie was like meth.
Yes.
You know.
Or Oxycontin.
But also, that's a white surprise. Like, it's not the Ku Klux Klan. The Ku Klux Klan are against drugs. They would never do, neo-Nazis.
At your membership rally? Is that what they told you?
Well, I mean, I read the pamphlet.
By the way, we're against drugs.
Now, to be clear, you read the pamphlet solely because you're a fan of reading pamphlets.
Yes.
But, wait, the Klan is straight edge?
No, the Klan, from what I can tell, the Klan is more into tradition. Like, that's what their thing is that it's all tradition. Whereas white supremacists are kind of just really into, the drug business just as, a means of operations.
Well, so,
from what I understand, Ku Klux Klan is like a club. You go there after work or something.
What, the Friars? Or
something like
that. What was Mr. Cunningham always going to in Happy Days? The Moose Lodge?
It was secretly the Klan. That was code.
Oh my God, Arthur Cunningham's secret racist?
And they weren't burning crosses. Those were just X's. For being straight edge.
Well, all right. So but regardless
traditionally in movies, I'm saying is this is the role. This is your skinheads. This is your Nazi flag in the background kind of guys.
Okay. Well, let me say in American History X, which is, what neo-Nazis are. That's my source of information. Daniel Vineyard is against drug use, but I think some of them aren't.
Yeah, I think
so. I guess it's more of freedom in Nazis.
I'm honestly taking a lot of this from what I've seen in Law and Order, but but there are other movies where I've seen them as it's a white supremacist thing. It's not like a
But the question at hand, though, this is a comedy podcast that discusses bad movies.
And I thought
this
was a hate crime drug podcast.
The bad movie at hand is Bad Boys 3. So the question at hand is, are these guys Klansmen in this movie? Because they're dressed in white and wearing hoods.
They're obviously Klansmen, right?
I'm argument that is that it's shockingly, weird. It's a detail in a Michael Bay movie that they got incorrect.
It's a thing in Michael Bay movie that just doesn't make any sense.
You know what happened? Okay. Michael Bay was sitting back watching Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? And said, I like that.
I actually would believe that. I would genuinely believe that.
Because it was a year or
that
two
before? That was 99.
Before? Yeah.
99, 2000.
I think it might have been 2000.
2000.
Yeah, sure. Blues Brothers 2000.
So they drop it off to this Klan rally. And, they're like, all hail the Aryan Brotherhood, blah, blah, blah. And then here we go, because you're sitting there, it's like, wow, we're 4 minutes into this movie. Where are my bad boys? And then off come a couple of hoods, and it's Martin Lawrence and Will Smith, guns toting in both hands like the Boondock Saints themselves.
Oh, shit.
And it's like, wow, how crazy is this audience? A couple of black guys dressed up in Klan outfits. They really got the drop on these rednecks.
And, of course, the fucking radios, the Henry Rollins' SWAT team aren't working.
This is infuriating. Here's why it's infuriating. You can claim radio failure, and that's fine if it's what's going on, because, Will Smith is like, all right, we got guns out. Hey, we bring the backup in, everybody. radio failure happens. Okay, that's acceptable. If these guys didn't have a dude with binoculars with a clear line of sight of what's going on, like, this guy can clearly see Will Smith and Martin Lawrence have their guns out, and he's like, I can't get a read on what's going on.
Looks like they're doing something cool.
Here's what's going on. The only two black guys at this Klan rally have pulled their guns out, which means your cops that you sent in there, who you know to be black, are in some sort of situation. Get your fucking ass in You're there right? and help out.
No, it's like, good. I hate their banter. Let him die.
Henry Rollins is like, no, hang back. If this goes south, we can finally be rid of all that annoying banter.
I mean, they sing the theme song from the show Cops and every day.
Lo and behold, to be all cocky while they got their guns on these Klansmen, they start singing Bad Boys.
What assholes. I'm sorry.
They're such big, fat, puckered assholes in this movie. You just pray for their death at every turn.
You really do.
It's just, and it's the same fucking thing in each goddamn scene that it happens in. It's like, oh, Will Smith, you're too crazy. No, Martin Lawrence, you gotta stop being spiritual. No, Will Smith, you gotta stop being crazy. Like, that's it. And it just escalates. And of course, it turns into a huge chaotic mess.
Yep.
Martin Lawrence gets shot in the ass.
Shot in the ass in one of the couple, maybe two or three times in this film, you have the bullet coming out of the gun, and we follow the CG slow motion bullet to its target.
Uh-huh.
Oh, God. I don't know if this movie started that trend. But
I think The Matrix might have started that trend.
Yeah, oh, yeah, I guess you're right.
I guess it's sort of just a bullet time type of thing. But then what's great about this is that bullet goes through Martin Lawrence's ass. That bullet's all covered with ass blood. Then it goes into this other guy's face.
Yeah, that guy's got ass blood all over his face. But you know what the good news is? He doesn't care because he's extremely dead. Because another thing in this movie, by the way, and I get it, like, they're supposed to be like ragtag cops and whatnot and all these action movies. You know, Bruce Willis is killing people left and right and Die Hard and whatever. Will Smith in this movie loves killing people. Because there's several times where he's like, hey, Martin Lawrence, why didn't you kill that guy? And Martin Lawrence is like, because I'm a human being. Like, I'm an officer of the law. Of course I'm not going to just murder
people.
He's
a renegade vigilante.
He is.
Under the police's protection.
He's lost all soul.
Yeah. There's like, nothing.
So they have the discussion after the raid on the Klan rally's gone down. They realize the bust is, a bust. They only found two bags of X. They thought this was going to be the big score kind of a thing. Will Smith's informant gave him the wrong info. So they're just arguing. And again, we keep saying banter, by the way. Banter is like, wow, these guys have some quick back and forth banter. They're being pretty witty. These motherfuckers just argue with each other. Yeah. Like, it's just petty arguing, bickering, if you will.
Yeah, bickering is
so they're just yelling back and forth. And really the only sort of reference to the first movie comes right here where he's like, Martin Lawrence is explaining how he's been seeing the shrink and it's helping him. You know, and he's getting kind of spiritual and learning how to control his anger and blah, blah, blah. That's great. And Will Smith mentions, you know, oh, yeah, I've been going to a shrink, too. The captain made me after I shot all those people at the airport. That's the first movie. Yep. But the difference is, like, Martin Lawrence is seeing this, like, nebbishy shrink, whatever. And you cut to Will Smith just getting sucked off by this
Sophia
psychiatrist.
Sophia Vergara is here for fucking him.
Is it Sophia Vergara?
No, I'm not. I'm kidding. Like,
oh, Jesus.
It's a Latin beauty.
Yeah, it's a Latin beauty.
I think that's what you're saying, right?
I mean, it's bizarre because this woman is dressed pretty much like a stripper, sucking him off in this office. And I'm like, I don't know if I would go. Like, what is this, Hollywood upstairs psychiatry office? Like, it doesn't look like the most legit establishment. I think he's just getting blown by a very professional prostitute.
I mean,
he's always talking about how he has that trust fund. Maybe he sets these up. Maybe this is his fetish.
Oh, just getting, like, blown by professionals?
Yeah, he rents out an entire office and, like, has it tastefully decorated.
Puts a couple Sigmund Freud books around.
This is the only way I can do it.
And I'm going to call you doctor.
So then we cut to, you know, who is the source of, you know, this ecstasy. And this is where Peter Stormare comes in. He's a club owner. And it is this ridiculous, like, bacchanal of, like, people just, like, fuck dancing and licking these pills off each other. I mean, ecstasy culture is not something I have any interest in. solely because of all the social awkwardness that comes along. I mean, these people are licking each other's fucking tongues and like, oh yeah, let me just get in here.
Nobody is not wearing a two-piece. The whole place is just bathing suits and like, and the dudes are the same way. They're just like in these cut-up things. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
And then one of them gets killed.
One of them starts overdosing, right? And actually, this is a big problem with this movie is I think, compared to the actor who is the actual villain here, who we'll get to later, but Peter Stormare, I think, is a pretty good actor. He's a good character actor. He's good at what he does. And in the beginning of this movie, you know, this dude starts ODing in the club, and he's on the phone, and he's like, oh, I have to go. Some motherfucker thinks he can die in my club. And instead of just like getting this dude medical attention, they fucking throw him out in the alley to die. And I was like, wow, that's some cold shit. This guy's going to make a great villain. Oh, what's that? Oh, he's just some like third tier thug and some other like Cuban guy's going to be like the main villain of this movie. All right.
Yeah, he turns out to kind of be like the comic relief eventually.
Oh, when he comes back in this movie at the end, he's a flat out cartoon character. It is like, you know, it's like Yahoo series. Yahoo series. Who am I thinking of?
Yahoo series.
No. The Russian comic there. Yakov Smirnoff. Yeah, it's like that kind of like cartoon Russian nonsense. Like he gets out of a car and like throws a bottle of vodka at a street sign. And you're just like, all right, you're just one step away from the arm folded kick dancing. Like,
But he is in a way a really big villain because for him, a nonchalant day is just like throwing someone to die in an alley.
But that's what my point is exactly, though. Like, that dude does something that cold.
Yeah.
He's your villain of the movie. I don't need this other fucking crazy dude. Just make Peter Stormare this rich, drug-pushing millionaire kind of a thing. But we just deal with this Cuban guy later on.
They'd rather him just be a goofball. And the Cuban guy is just
Johnny Tapia is the real, deal.
He really fucks shit up.
So, yeah.
But before even that stuff happens, we have to deal with fucking this subplot involving Will Smith, Mike Lowry, and Martin Lawrence's sister, Gabrielle Union.
Right. So in comes Gabrielle Union, and she's
playing
Sydney, Martin Lawrence's sister, who I don't believe they even mention in the first movie, right?
Oh, no, absolutely.
No,
not.
This is a completely new creation. No. And, you know, she's there and, you know, she works for the DEA, but as far as they know, she's just this paper pusher.
She's coming over for a barbecue at this mansion that Martin Lawrence owns. I don't know how. He's on the take.
This is amazing because actually my note, I have a note written down that says mansion because I got the same guy. I'm dead serious. You can look at it right there.
It is on the water. It's like two stories. It's humongous. There's no way. Like unless Teresa Randall like runs Whole Foods, there's no way that this place can like be a cop salary.
It's ridiculous. No, and the thing that makes no sense is he has this gorgeous ass house, right? And he's bitching about this $3,900 shit-ass above-ground pool that they have. And he's, like, you know, sitting in this thing, and his kids are like, Daddy, this pool's a piece of shit. And he's like, this pool cost me $3,900. You know, and it's like, so you're complaining about that, but the McMansion that you have to pay all this property tax on, like, how's that balancing out? Is literally everything? Are you like maybe he's house poor? I guess.
He's got to be crooked, man. I don't know if he's on the take or if he's like doing some other busts that he's not like reporting, just offing people
just taking
that
stuff.
Money, probably taking the drugs and selling them at the clubs.
But why would you buy a shitty pool?
Because I already bought the house.
He probably
didn't have enough, and he's it's like you got to keep up with the Joneses. You need a pool. Everyone's got a pool.
Do you think it's maybe one of those like Lethal Weapon 4 situations where we don't hear it, but like Teresa Randall, who plays Martin Lawrence's wife, she's writing like romance novels under a presumed name.
Isn't that just a frustrating reveal in that sequel?
Her real name is Jessica Fletcher. She's the popular murder she wrote.
Yeah, right. For our younger listeners out there, there was once a classic mystery series starring Angela Lansbury.
You know, I'm kind of a detective of my own. That's my Angela Lansbury.
I don't know. This might be some comedian's bit, so I don't want to harp on it too much. But like, you would never invite Jessica Fletcher over for dinner. Because someone's going to get killed.
Yeah.
You know, she can't go anywhere.
A trail of dead in her wake.
Which, it's like, true. How does that keep happening?
Because I'm killing them.
I mean, frankly, I'd be moving a lot because I'm like, you know what? Maybe this is just bad luck. I shouldn't be in Miami
anymore. Whenever a Jessica Fletcher moves into your neighborhood, you should be notified like a sex offender.
Everybody might, boards up the windows.
You might die.
Just a notice to the neighborhood. There's a super successful murder mystery author that moved into town. Just be aware. Let's everybody keep an eye behind them.
It would be hilarious if she would like have to go door to door like a pedophile and be like, look, a bunch of people die around me all the time.
Here's a list of my successful novels. Please be aware.
But they're all based on people who have died in real life.
And I'm working on a new one.
And it might star you, my new neighborhood friend.
And there's a White House in it. Look at your house.
It's also revealed here, by the way, that Will Smith is together with Gabrielle Union, but they have not informed Martin Lawrence. She expected him to do so. She lives up in New York. He went up for some prisoner transport that we don't see.
But what's great, too, about this scene is, like, she's trying to be all touchy with him because they have developed a relationship together in New York while he was there.
Right.
And he's, like, you know, disavowing its existence and, like, pushing her away and stuff and being, like, he's being really weird to both people. Both parties, you know, Marcus and this girl.
It's really terrible.
What a jerk, man.
And like,
open up.
Dude, I just saw a guy die from X. Like, he overdosed and he's dead. Guess what? A new rule for Hollywood in general. 5 minutes after a guy overdoses, you don't get to do a Beethoven gag. Because this dog, Martin Lawrence's dog, pulls some chain around, like, the shitty pool, drags it so hard that the thing rips out of the ground and opens up into the ocean.
Ha ha, your pool's broken.
Take that $3,900 literally down the drain.
Literally down the budget. But how cool was that, man? We got to see water.
Yeah.
And it went out to, like, the ocean or whatever, because this is how wealthy this guy is. He's got goddamn Riviera
it's
property.
Like, it's like canal front property. Yeah, it's pretty crazy.
Beautiful place.
All right, so Gabrielle Union's like, hey, I got some business to take care of. You know, I'll see you guys later. Enjoy your family barbecue, blah, blah, blah. So it turns out she's actually UC. She is undercover with the DEA, taking care of business with Peter Stormare, like doing a big X deal. I guess also a big problem in Miami as far as, like, you know, crime, we've got these, like, X runners and all this shit. Also, Haitian pirates is an issue here.
Yep.
Because these Haitian pirates hijack this drug deal, or try to, and it's this big, ridiculous chase scene, like, with Gabrielle Union, you know, trying to outrun these dudes so she can get the money to I guess, Johnny Tapia's people. By the way, let's say this up front. This is a confusing, convoluted-ass movie.
I've now seen this movie 5 times in my life.
Well, that's congratulations. Welcome to Five-Timers
Club.
No,
that's a slit-your-throat congratulations. But this is what it is that she's doing money laundering for Peter Stormare in the hopes that Peter Stormare will ask her to do the money laundering for Johnny Tapia.
Oh, yeah. All right. So arrange the meeting to Johnny Tapia.
By the way, she has this, they got this, like, secret truck. This, like, surveillance. Like,
oh,
this
God, the product placement. Oh,
that's what
movie.
I'm getting to, because guess what? Man, did I crave a Miller Genuine Draft while watching this movie.
It is fucking everywhere.
All over the place.
Like, the truck pulls into screen. You see the giant logo for Miller Genuine Draft. I'm like, and it goes. We cut from that. I'm like, oh, was that just just product placement? Oh no, don't worry. The truck's gonna do some cool stuff soon.
Oh
and
yeah,
that's how cool it is to have Miller Genuine Draft.
It's Gabrielle Union's secret money laundering, like, transport
laboratory. Yeah. It's so ridiculous.
It's like Walter White's RV, you know, but just for money laundering.
She's cooking the books.
I love it if she walked out and Q walked out right after her and, like, we have your money laundering weaponry right here.
I would love it. So, there's a big chase scene and, you know, it goes. This, I mean, it's ridiculous. Like, cars are flying off parking garages. Bodies are flying everywhere. It's this huge high-speed I mean, this is, it's the famous one from the trailer. Like, they hijack a car carrier truck, and they're hucking cars at the cops and all this shit. And by the way, I mean, like, this shit's going on. Police cars are literally exploding all over the place. And a few minutes from now, Joe Pantoliano is about to sit here and tell us, thank God no cops were killed. Are you kidding me?
Oh, they absolutely got killed.
Cars are going up in flames. Like, these dudes are not surviving this shit.
I think he said at one point, like, three are critical. I'm like, yeah, 300 are critical,
yeah,
probably.
Yeah, like, we got a bunch of brothers downtown in critical condition. No, they're at the morgue. In the best possible condition you can be at the morgue. Charred.
The climactic bank robbery from Heat is like half of this, maybe.
Well, you guys should be proud. You just made the coroner a lot of money.
So what's really nauseating in this movie to me is the sequence where they go to this Haitian pirate's hideout or house or whatever.
Arr!
because you know, they're on one side of a wall and all these dudes are in the other room on another side. And it's a lot of just shooting through this wall. And Michael Bay decides it's going to be great to have this like 360 camera just flying around in a circle in this movie, you know, in this scene while they're yelling. And it's this one continuous thing. I wanted to vomit, like this roller coaster ride of garbage.
And it's loud as fuck. And it, like, it's a really an unpleasant experience all around.
It's like it's seriously like sensory overload. Like, you think your eardrums are gonna bleed.
And I guarantee you, as Michael Bay, like, oh fucking yeah, do it.
Oh yeah, throttle that shit.
Yeah, my asshole just puckered up.
Go to red level. Pull it to red.
I mean, the problem with this movie, and you know, again, why it's so long, is there's just so many scenes of like, okay, let's go to this person for information. Oh, it's going to turn into a big shootout slash chase scene. That's over with. Now we're going to get yelled at by Joe Pantoliano for a few minutes. Then we're going to get another lead.
And then we're going to steal Dan Marino's car. Because, hey, Miami, right? Dan Marino. That's what you wanted.
He's the city's treasure.
He soured himself on me with this. I was like, you did Ace Ventura. You were great in Ace Ventura.
Oh, he's so fantastic
in
Ace Ventura.
And now, man, you're just fucking giving the keys to goddamn Will Smith. Really, just, you know what? Stop it.
So the big tip that they get from the Haitian pirates that they don't murder is that there's this one Haitian pirate who enjoys filming all of his criminal activity. Well, isn't that convenient? So they've got a video camera that has a hole in the viewfinder. So they go, this is an embarrassing sequence. They go to an electronics store.
This is an amazing
this
sequence.
This is insanity.
So they go to this electronics store. It's like a mom and pop operation. And they go to this kid and they're like, we need to see what's on this tape. And someone shot the viewfinder, which it's like, they didn't shoot the tape, so just take the tape out of the camera. And oh, you don't know about any of that? Okay, that's fine. You don't understand how video cameras work because you're fucking idiots in this movie? Great.
Well, while fucking Martin Lawrence was vamping in the room full of corpses a minute ago.
Wait, are they saying that you can't check a tape of something, like at the police station, when the police have some type of thing? Do they actually just go to shops and like wave their gun around to
I
get
guess,
things done?
I mean, maybe it's like, we don't have time to get back to the station, but it's bullshit because there is a techno nerd dude that they harass later in the movie.
From the first movie.
Yeah. So just take it to that guy.
Why not? Because like, if you're going to have this guy in there, there was no reason for him to be in there in the fucking first place.
Well, who in the theater was like, oh God, the nerdy tech guy is back.
Fuck ass is back. No, I mean, like, and it is that kind of situation where like, who gives a shit?
It's like, you could have had another scene with that guy, but instead, you know, the point of having this badge is so I could put it in someone's face and tell them what to do.
Exactly. So they go into this place and they're watching this on the monitor and it's like, oh, here's a dude, you know, people are like, you know, smoking weed and whatever. Oh, okay, here's a picture of a boat or something. I don't know what
clue
they
home.
Get here. Oh, right, the funeral home. Oh, that funeral home's owned by Johnny Tapia's mother. Oh, that's a nice clue. Okay,
yeah,
cut to, oh my God, this woman's getting fucked on camera. And it turns into this sex tape. And then the most implausible thing of all time is the kid is like, oh, all right, well, listen, my dad owns this store. I better turn this off. He would find this inappropriate. Whoops, instead of pressing the off button, I pressed the turn it onto 50 other TVs in the store button. Like, what the fuck are you doing?
Just pull the cords. That's
just
all you need to
pull
do.
Pull the cord. I can't stand stuff like this where it's like, oh no, this electronic device is getting out of control and I can't stop it.
Turn it off! Turn it off!
So this woman's just getting railed on this camera and like all these people are like, what is going on? This woman gets offended. Like, all these old people are yelling at this kid, and the dad comes up like, what the fuck's going on in my store? And blah, blah, blah.
My goddamn store! Like, it's like, it's
but
stressed.
Then he can't get this thing turned off, and all these, it's like these two guys who are supposed to be, like, electronic salesmen can't turn off this tape.
Oh, he turns it off, and he turns it to Martin Lawrence and Will Smith in the, like, special camera room where, like, they have a showcase room, I guess, for the different cameras. And they are having this dialogue. Like, this is not so much bickering as just Martin Lawrence fucking debasing himself.
Oh, absolutely debasing himself. And, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, you know what this movie needs? A clever misunderstanding. Because the whole thing is like, Martin Lawrence says, you know, oh, ever since you shot me in the ass, like, my ass still kind of hurts from what you did to it, but yeah, I can't get erections anymore. And all these people, of course it's being broadcast to the entire store.
And it's just like 50 goddamn gay jokes.
Just
and
right
just
in a row.
It's so terrible.
50 of a total of 89,762 that are in this fucking movie.
And I mean, how many of them are good, you know? Like, if you're going to do this joke, do it well.
Just find like one if you want to make a joke.
You don't half-ass a gay joke.
And there's even a cut to a gay couple watching this thing and like being like, that man is pouring his heart out. Oh, he's such an asshole.
Yeah, because like Martin Lawrence is saying all this stuff. It's being taken out of context. And then Will Smith is being like, I don't want to hear about your broken dick and all this shit. Like, put this all in your shut the fuck up box and throw it in the river. You know, he's being like classic prick, you know, Mike Lowry in this movie.
Just riff.
Yeah,
just go.
Yeah, just go with it. And so all these people are just horrified. And then they get out and like, there's this like, you know, big husky woman who's like getting all their fits. Like, you sick motherfuckers, get the fuck out. And it's like, oh, so now we've had all these horrible gay jokes. There's a couple of gay stereotypes over there. And then this woman hates gay people. It's like, get your fucking disgusting ass out of this store. And you're just like, oh my God, can we end this ignorant ass scene as quickly as possible?
And just for good measure, the little kid asking, what's the direction?
Oh yeah, just so there's one God. Last joke.
Just that little button on top the Hollywood screenwriter had to put in there. Like, yeah, this, you know what? This doesn't vilify gay people enough yet.
Isn't this from the pen of Ron Shelton?
Who or what is a Ron Shelton?
I think Ron Shelton?
Shelton
is the guy who did like The Contender and all that.
Ron Shelton and Jerry Stahl wrote the screenplay.
Am I wrong in that Ron Shelton is the...
Well, Ron Shelton, let's see. Bad Boys 2, Hollywood Homicide, Play to the Bone, Tin Cup, Great White Hype, Cobb, Blue Chips. We were just talking about Blue Chips last week. White Man Can't Jump. Oh, Blaze, Bull Durham, The Best of Times, and Under Fire. Well, this guy wrote a lot of good movies. Yeah. So he wrote Bad Boys 3 or 2. Wow, I really want this third fucking movie to come out. Jesus.
From the pen of Ron Shelton comes this guy who has done nothing but good comedies. And that's kind of the problem. And it's always kind of the problem with Michael Bay movies in general is that, like, you want to be both a really, like, for a good word, bawdy humor.
Yeah.
On top of this crazy ass action, like, gross action stuff. And the mashup just makes it, like, feel super long, super awkward, and none of it hits.
Well,
almost none of the humor hits.
Well, to be fair, like, he might not have even written this scene at all, you know, because, you know, in Hollywood, they'll replace people, they'll get people to punch it up, director as actors input, you know, it gets mutated.
I mean, and especially
Frank
this
Miller
scene.
Did a pass on this, is what you're saying?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There ain't enough terrorist jokes in this. And this is a post 9/11 movie, so you bet there's fucking dirty terrorist jokes to be
We're
told.
We're gonna go back to the original terrorists, Cubans.
Cuba, the world's original terrorist state.
Yeah, they almost had a nuclear missile stored there once.
When you pop me from behind, I think you damaged some nerves.
Okay.
Now I can't
what?
I can't even get an erection.
What's an erection?
So they determine that they get a name of a boat off of some of this garbage. So it's like, oh, all right. I remember that boat. That's from when we busted those rednecks. Let's get Michael Shannon in this movie, who I did not know at the time it was Michael Shannon. I saw this movie twice in theaters when it came out. You know, and it was before Michael Shannon is Michael Shannon now, yeah. You know.
Well, this is fresh off Kangaroo Jack.
Yeah, yeah, totally. Man, oh man, Kangaroo Jack. Couldn't even watch it. Watch the first 10 minutes. Turn it right off.
It was sitting in my Netflix queue for so long. I'm like, one day I have to watch this for the show. And it just never happened.
That's what I tried to do, and I couldn't. It was like 10, 15 minutes. Turned it right the fuck off. I don't even think I got to Kangaroo Jack.
I think I got to Kangaroo Jack, and that's when I left.
Oh, the talking kangaroos here. Stop.
Oh, Jar Jar Binks the movie?
So they go on a stakeout with Michael Shannon, and it's the two of them, Michael Shannon and Gabrielle Union's there, too. And, you know, it's this whole thing, you know, she's sort of in with Johnny Tapia now, and they're trying to make this bust or whatever. And this is where all the emotions get laid out on the table, because I have to take these characters seriously for some reason. And, you know, this is where it's revealed to Martin Lawrence, you know, that the two of them have this relationship. Martin Lawrence gets all sorts of upset, you know, because earlier in the film, he accuses Will Smith of, like, you know, trying to be controlling with his family because, you know, Mike Lowry doesn't have one. And he's like, oh, great. And now you're fucking my sister. So, okay, perfect. You really just want to take over my family. That's fine. You know, they just have this big fight.
For good reason. Like, Martin Lawrence, like, they try to make this an even thing where, like, Martin Lawrence is more, like, weird asides and, like, kind of strange way of expressing himself. And the spiritual, the woosah bullshit.
Oh, woosah. Holy shit.
Who gives a fuck? But, like, he is so clearly the better person.
Yeah.
In every scene.
Hands down.
And so in this scene, like, he's just like, look, I'm done with you. I'm getting transferred. Fuck this.
Yep.
And so then we find out where the trade is happening.
There's some sort of trade going down. I don't know.
There's
it's
too
around,
much in this movie.
There really, I mean, this is around the time. This is what I want to mention. There's two annoying things that happened right in a row here. So we're about to start car chase number 7042. And they're like, oh, man, we don't have a car for some reason. Let's commandeer this car. Hilarious Michael Bay cameo. And Michael Bay's driving a shitty car, everybody.
The old fisherman's cap.
Yeah, he's got
on.
The big old bucket hat on. He looks like that old fucker from The Walking Dead.
Dale?
Dale, yes, yeah. Thank you. So then they're like, that car's not good enough, the one Michael Bay's driving. Let's take the one that Dan Marino is taking for a test drive. And you're just like, Jesus fucking Christ.
Please, can we just get to it? Whatever it is, can we just fucking get... Can you stop... Can we not have a discussion, like a Tarantino-esque discussion in every action you make? Can you just walk into a house?
You know what? No. And I need a car that's fly enough so I can drive.
It's
got
to be Jag or better.
I can't be seen in that.
It's like, hey, by the way, Will Smith, if you did take the shitty car that Michael Bay's character was driving... it's called being inconspicuous. Like, there's multiple times in this movie where he rolls up next to these criminals driving down the street, and they look at him, and then notice it's two dudes who they may have seen before driving a flashy car, and then Will Smith being like, oh no, they somehow made us. Well, of course they made you, you fucking idiot! You're driving a goddamn Dodge fucking Viper! Like, you're driving these beautiful fucking
cars!
Yeah,
it's like they pull up like a neon orange Lamborghini with flamethrowers on it, and being like, no, I don't notice this.
They're, like, so much worse than James Bond with that shit. Like, it fucking, there's a scene where they're about to go on another undercover assignment, and Martin Lawrence is just in a normal t-shirt, and fucking Will Smith comes out in this neon purple something or other.
Oh my God, it's like a fucking Prince Halloween costume. It's out of control. And of course, it's slow motion, like putting the jacket on, looking like a suave motherfucker.
Another time to put on the P. Diddy song. Yeah, shake those tail
Welcome
feathers.
To Miami. Yeah. Ame. Whatever that Will Smith song was.
Yeah, get the jigs out. Getting them jigs. That's
jiggy
it.
With it. I believe is that.
I like my way better.
Well, then you're just talking about, like, Irish step dance or something.
Yes.
Which I would love to see Will Smith attempt, by the way. Speaking of Will Smith dancing, quick side note here. I don't want to lose track of talking about the shitty movie. Have you guys seen Will Smith and Jaden Smith on the Graham Norton show?
No.
Oh.
I did not.
It's fucking awesome. Because it's the two of them, and they're plugging that After Earth nonsense, whatever. Woo. But Graham Norton and Will Smith are talking about something, and he's like, Will Smith is like, oh, last time I was on your show, I rapped or I did something. And he's like, oh, I thought I could do you one better. So him and Jaden get up, and nice. Out comes DJ Jazzy Jeff, and he does the fucking Fresh Prince rap, right? And then Alfonso Ribeiro comes out, and they do Tom Jones, and they're doing the fucking Carlton dance. It is fantastic. Like, say what you want about After Earth, whatever. I still haven't seen it, but, like, it is a fantastic piece of television. Hilariously, also, other guests on the program, presumably promoting Hangover 3, is
Ed Helms?
No, the stud.
Bradley Cooper.
Yep. Promoting Hangover 3 is Bradley Cooper, and then Heather Graham is there. And while Will Smith is doing the Fresh Prince rap, Heather Graham is ridiculously dancing. Like, dance like no one's watching Heather Graham. Like, it is redonkulous.
By herself?
No, well, because, like, they're, you know, he's doing the rap and everybody's, like, having a good time.
Yeah.
But she is just, like, eyes closed, fucking dancing her soul away.
Oh, she's probably, like, on something.
She could have been fucked up. Yeah, I don't know.
No,
she might have been drunk.
The ex said hit and kicked in.
Yeah, there's a little something from the set of Bad Boys 2. Let's take a little.
So anyway, it's on YouTube. Totally recommend checking that out. It's a nice little. It's one of those things where you're like, yeah, there is evil in the world, but there's also this video.
Unless they're doing Summertime, I'm not interested.
Oh, a purist. Oh.
I see.
So by the way, so this is like they realize this funeral parlor's involved. So like they're chasing this truck, and all these fucking bodies are flying out. Will Smith's just driving over like six heads. It's disgusting.
Ha ha. That's the reaction the audience was supposed to have.
And also, like, dude,
you know what I like out of a hero, Chris?
What?
When they desecrate corpses.
Yeah, that's always the one you want to go for.
I wish Superman. You know what? I hope when Man of Steel comes out next week, he desecrates a couple of corpses.
And if he forgets to desecrate one of them, I want him to fly around the earth and then make sure he desecrates that body.
Oh, no, I forgot to desecrate that corpse. Whoosh, 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 whoosh. Time travel. Desecrate. Okay, we're caught up to speed.
Not only am I going to kill you, I'm going to fuck with your body.
He just, like, he puts General Zod's, like, corpse in a dog park and says, like, have at it.
Go to town, boys. all these super dogs come out and eat his.
That would be
body.
My if
he takes his dick out first, though, right?
If Man of Steel ends that way, I forgive Sucker Punch.
Wow.
If that's how that ends, I forgive Sucker Punch. But that's like the only way I forgive Sucker Punch.
You know, with regard to whether or not I've seen Sucker Punch, by the way, to quote our friend Steve Sadek, still happy, by the way.
Yep,
I never saw that.
Dancing
fucking
on Sunshine.
You guys both saw it?
I saw it. I was inebriated. I don't remember a lot of it, but I remember it being very hurtful. It's such a bad movie that it hurts.
It's like when you're a kid and you first get your shot and you're just like, I don't want to look at it. I don't want to look at it. Ow!
So they get in trouble with Joe Pantoliano again. Martin Lawrence is fucking furious at this point.
My favorite scene in the movie because he's like, do you know what happens every time just a body falls onto the street? I have to call this guy. I have to call this guy. I have to pay him. I have to do it. Like, I have to do all this shit.
All these cleaning crews.
And that's just for one body landing on the street. You have just fucking massacred five people and then desecrated a bunch of empty corpses.
But he doesn't care because he's just trying to get this Johnny Tapia, and Joey Pants just does not understand. Just like parents. Uh-huh. They don't understand either.
He would
Fresh be Prince.
Yeah.
Off the force.
Oh, easy. Oh, yeah. And you know what's funny is you expect in movies like this some form of, like, turn over your badge, I need your weapon. Not once is that even brought up as, like, a possibility.
Just don't do it again. Here's an Uzi.
Here's an Uzi and a $100,000 car. So this is where Martin Lawrence is like, I'm sick and tired of your shit. FYI, I already signed my transfer papers. After we nail Johnny Tapia, fuck you, this is over with. And you're like, oh no, is this the end of the Bad Boys?
Oh yes, is this the end of the Bad Boys? Thank God.
But so then we have to have another Martin Lawrence at home scene. Will Smith comes in, and it's Martin Lawrence's daughter's big night. She's going on her first date, and we need to get in some threatening a 16-year-old boy with 15. Rape. Oh, 15. Oh, yeah. Excuse me. 15.
It's even younger.
With the threat of rape is in this movie. So,
or getting shot.
Well, sizing this guy up, and they're like, you know, you could take out my daughter, busting his balls a little bit.
Well, they're putting on a real show here.
But then they really take it too far.
Well, Martin Lawrence is like, he opens the door like, "What the fuck do you want?" And you're like, "All right, this is where this is going to go." All right, it's very, you know, humor filled, just busting this kid's balls. Then Will Smith comes out brandishing a firearm and an open bottle of liquor.
Saying he just got released from prison.
You ever made love to a man?
No.
You want to?
And you're just like, why are you going to fuck this kid?
And then they're just like, are you a virgin?
Oh, yeah. He's like, yeah. Oh, yeah. Then Martin Lawrence is like, you can stay that way. No fucking tonight and all this shit. And I was like, oh, my God.
I want to see the next scene where this kid and this girl get in the car. He's like, your uncle just threatened to rape me.
Hey, is that guy over a lot, or
is he staying there? Is he going to be here when we get back?
And I mean, I appreciate this kind of a scene. It's so over the top, though. Like, I remember one time me and my brother and my father were sitting there. We were watching a Ranger game, right? And this fella comes a-calling for my younger sister, right? So this asshat comes in the house. Motherfucker makes the mistake of going, a hockey game? Why are you watching this? My father turns around and goes, because it's my house. And this dude shut the fuck right up. Classic my dad.
That is completely legitimate, and that should happen.
And you know what? My dad didn't put a gun in this kid's face and threaten to fuck him.
Yeah. Also,
he didn't threaten him with rape?
No.
It's just a missed opportunity. I heard that's funny, according to Bad Boys 2.
It's like you've got alcohol, you're threatening to rape this kid, and you've got a loaded weapon in this kid's face, and the way Will Smith's holding this gun, the finger's on the trigger.
I was waiting for that Pulp Fiction moment.
Oh my God, if you shot Martin in the head, like, this would be, one, a completely better movie, and a completely different movie.
Oh, yeah, then the rest of the movie is them trying to get away with murder.
Or Will Smith on death row.
No, in this movie, like in any other movie, you're right.
Yes,
in this movie,
right.
It would just be him sitting down with Joe Pantoliano and him just, like, woo-sighing and, like,
woo-sah, I can't believe you shot this kid right in the head!
Yeah, what would really happen, you're right, in this movie, Will Smith would throw a couple ecstasy pills on his fucking bladdered out head, what was left of the head, and then it would just be swept under the rug because that's what the law is.
Yo, John, captain, he was dealing drugs. There's one.
Johnny Tapia did that.
Oh yeah, captain, you should have seen it. This nice boy was coming to take my goddaughter out on a date, and then Johnny Tapia drove by and killed him.
Well, actually, he drove by. He got out of the car. He took my gun and then shot him in the face. Well, actually, he had my fingers pull the trigger because he held my hand, and it hurt real bad.
He actually paralyzed me. He gave me a full paralytic, and then he held my hand up to shoot the boy.
He gave me a solid Vulcan nerve pinch and fucking took over.
That's why the ballistics are like that. That's why.
There's also an interesting thing here that I want to note. This movie obviously shot on location in the city of Miami. My wife, born and raised in Miami, Florida. There's a scene in this part of the movie where Will Smith's all like, man, oh man, I can't believe my partner hates my guts. I remember back in high school when we were good buddies signing each other's yearbooks. Will Smith takes out the yearbook, Miami Palmetto High School, my wife's high school.
Nice.
Appears in this movie in yearbook form.
She went to high school with Will Smith?
Yep, that's exactly what I'm saying.
And of course, in the picture, he's got the headgear and the, like, fucking Poindexter glasses.
Of course, he was a big nerd, so he's making up for it by being the fuck machine that is Mike Lowry.
Also, by the way, in the yearbook, he has signed it, We Die Together, Bad Boys for Life.
Yeah.
Isn't the Bad Boys thing supposed to be, like, didn't they get it from the fucking song? Or have they always said
it? I guess they would have always have said it then.
Because I just assume that that's what they got from the song, and that's why they keep singing the song.
So I guess you could just be like, hey, we're a couple of bad boys. We're the bad boys. And then luckily this song came along, so they also had a theme song for their game.
I mean, but it's also more, that's a Pete Diddy thing, is Bad Boy Entertainment.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
Bad Boy for Life. Like, right. That's a Sean. And, like, that record wasn't really popular until, like, 95, 96.
Wait, in high school, you're running around, you're saying we're going to be bad boys for life, and then you sign up for the police? I guess there's a thin line between criminal and
cop. It's that thin blue line, man. Also, my wife said she met both of them, and Martin Lawrence was a dick, and Will Smith was very nice.
Makes sense.
But then Martin went into rehab, like, right after this, so who knows what demons he was battling. It's just ironic, though, because in this movie, Mike Lowry is such a fucking disgusting pain in the ass, and poor Marcus, you just want to, you know, see in a different movie.
I guess that they are good actors.
And
I think that's confirmed now.
And soon enough, we're in another movie.
The Bay of Pigs 2?
Yes.
So the next scene is they go to Johnny Tapia's funeral home.
Oh, God.
And they're rooting around there. And they go into this, I guess it's a morgue.
Well, it's a funeral parlor, and they just go into the back area where all the bodies are. I almost said taxidermy, but that's not what it is.
I guess it's sort of like a morgue.
Yeah, it's the back room where you're taking out all the organs and putting sawdust in them.
Yeah.
You know, you got to prep these bodies. They don't do that at morgues necessarily.
Well, you know, it's the corpse room. Everyone's got one.
Yeah, they're just at the corpse room.
And speaking of desecrating corpses.
Oh, Jesus.
Here comes our fucking, you know. We did everything else. Had to do everything. Fucking dead bodies.
Why not some necrophilia humor just for the folks to take something home with
Why
them?
Do I have to go to this movie and see Will Smith go gaga over a set of some dead babe's big hooters?
It is egregious.
It's just, he's just looking at these big dead breasts. This dead flesh, and it's like riling up that killer inside of him.
Because he's a sociopath. Yeah, he doesn't get the difference between like somebody who's dead and alive.
And he's just sitting there like, I want to make a suit out of this woman.
If it was just the bad boy there, not the bad boys there, he would have gone to town on this corpse.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if there's an actual Will Smith damn, which is featured quite a bit in this movie.
He's looking at it so long that Marcus has to tell him to stop.
Yeah, it's a real get a good look Costanza right here. He's like, he's like, are you serious right now? Get yourself together.
What? They're just nice.
Yeah, exactly.
Nice titties. What?
I don't care if they're dead. They're still... What, just because she's dead, she's got ugly breasts, Marcus?
It would be funny if it said that he was just like... He turned over and there's like a guy's... Like an old man's like crotch and he's just looking at
it. I'd be like, you fell for it, Will Smith. You fell for a lady boy there.
Mike! What? Nice ball sack.
Man's got a nice scrotum.
So, of course, this gets botched, too, because they're trying to, like, distract all the people at the funeral parlor. There's a couple of other agents that they're, you know, buddies with that are helping them along.
This is a shitty thing, again, from the first movie where they had these two Latin detectives that were kind of like their opposite, their foils in the department, essentially.
Right. One of which is played by the dude. I don't remember the character's name. But on Seinfeld, Kramer's always running afoul of the aggressive gay couple. Uh-huh. The Hispanic dude from Seinfeld is this guy.
Yeah.
I think his name... No, Ramon was the pool boy on Seinfeld. I don't remember the dude's name, but yeah. When they're trying to get like the chest of drawers or whatever.
The armoire.
The armoire. Yeah. It's that guy.
We are taking this.
Who doesn't want to wear the ribbon?
Yeah. Who doesn't want to wear the ribbon? That guy. Exactly. And they're from the first. It's the same two actors.
It's the same guys, they're back again. And like every time they're in a joke, it's like an immigration joke and like a soul food joke.
Exactly. They fire off like Martin Lawrence and Will Smith fire off like a racist, you know, Latin thing or a Cuban thing of some kind. They fire back like a racist black thing. Hilarious.
And so they create a distraction so they can get out of here. But while they were in there. Two things happen. First, they find out that all the ecstasies are being packed into emptied out dead bodies.
Correct.
Second, and more importantly, which transports us into the other movie, fucking Martin Lawrence accidentally, two ecstasy pills get dropped into a glass of water he's drinking.
Yes.
And he just downs them. Somehow he didn't feel two fucking pills going down your throat.
It's so stupid.
Keep in mind that if you're going to do ecstasy, it was probably stored in a dead corpse. And the health standards, you don't know what you're getting into. Yeah.
Listen, everybody, you know, from the ground, take it down. Pill form, you better be knowing where you got it
this
from.
This might
tell
be
you
the
what.
Next start of the plague. This might be the Black Plague coming back.
This is how the zombie apocalypse happens. We start taking pills from corpses, and then it's like, oh no, I'm turning into an ecstasy-filled zombie.
If anybody found that shit out, the ecstasy business would be going down the tubes.
But it's so stupid. So it's like two pills pop in, and it's into the glass, and you're like, oh man, someone's drinking this. And like, the reason he drinks the water is because he's so disgusted by corpses that he keeps vomiting. Like, a dude's top of his skull falls off and he vomits, you know, so he's like, I'm gonna chug these pills. Then these dudes come back, and Martin Lawrence has to like bunk with the babe corpse for a little bit, like Will Smith hides in a closet. So the guys are gonna like take the woman in next to be, you know, filled with pills and whatnot. So Will Smith's distraction is drive that ambulance into this building. Just not because, hey, guys, how else am I going to murder Johnny Tapia? So drive the fucking car into the building so we can continue this
guys,
case.
We have to end this Tim Burton scene, so let's just fucking get in here and crash the thing.
Martin Lawrence's corpse bride. That would be a movie. Martin Lawrence marrying, like, he's about to marry the woman of his dreams and she dies. And then, like, he brings her back to life like Frankenweenie.
And then he stuffs her full of pills.
That Frankenweenie movie, by the way, is pretty good.
Yeah, I liked that.
Oh, really? I haven't seen
it. Yeah,
it's
not bad. I was hesitant, but just because of Tim Burton's track record.
Last year was a good year for
it. It was a good year.
Dark Shadows, I really like.
Yep. Mm-hmm. I could do without that, what's her name?
Chloe Moritz.
Chloe Grace Moritz. Yeah. A teenage werewolfette.
She's probably, she would be the weak link, I would say. But, so, here comes the scene, man. So they decide after this disaster, they're going to go at like 11 p.m. at night to go fucking talk to Joe Pantoliano about getting like all the stuff for a siege.
Get a big old Johnny Tapia warrant going on.
And we're
going
to get everything.
And they leave their Cuban partners holding the fucking bag at this funeral parlor, by the way. They like sneak out the back door. These dudes have to play cleanup with all this
shit. Yeah, that's what they get for not being
one of the bad boys.
Yeah, they're not part of the bad boys.
Right.
So, of course, the ecstasy starts kicking in, and here we go. A hilarious scene of Martin Lawrence on ecstasy. Now, this is one of those, like, just tell Joe Pantoliano what happened, and it's fine.
Yeah.
But no. It's Will Smith being, like, trying to distract Joe Pantoliano, like, look at my camera, all this shit.
This guy has forgiven murder upon murder on your part. Cold-blooded desecration of life.
Oh, yeah. Cops, the whole thing.
Fucking he would do a tap dance. Oh, all you did is take ecstasy? This is fucking fantastic.
You know,
okay.
Actually, this should be called Michael Bay's Bad Lieutenant.
You're absolutely right. It's double dose of Bad Lieutenant in this movie.
The Bad Lieutenants.
Martin Lawrence is like licking things and like touching Will Smith's back and like acting like a freaking wacko.
Because that's what drugs does.
I guess so.
I mean, that's ecstasy.
You're gonna lick backs. It's going to be a mess.
Yep. Licking hands. Just, oh, God.
And, of course, by the way, when this scene comes to an end and Joe Pantoliano obviously finds out what's going on, he's like, all right, wait, what's happening here? What the fuck is he doing? Why is he wearing my bathrobe and drinking water out of a plant vase? Will Smith's just like, oh, he accidentally ingested ecstasy. Cut to Joe Pantoliano, like, comforting Martin Lawrence, being like, here, you got to get in the shower. You have to keep your body
calling
temperature
poison
down.
Control, like, yeah, like, doing what you're supposed to do.
It's so fucking stupid. Like, we just sat through this whole ridiculous scene. Like,
well, because it was funny. We wanted to have funny. We wanted funny.
Regardless of how funny it is, if you're scared that, you know, oh, the captain's going to overreact, the joke is him being like, he did what? Not, oh, here, please get in the shower. We want to make sure you're okay. Like, You can't spend 10 minutes of him
building that
scene,
to it.
You're right. I mean, like, in that scene, it does have to be like, what the fuck, guys?
Yeah.
But, like, in because it's a Michael Bay movie and we can't just have a scene where somebody does something, it has to be, you know, fucking Glengarry Glen Ross for 15 minutes before we get to anything.
What the fuck is going on?
He ingested X.
You okay, pal? Take it easy. Okay, thank you. Poison Lady says we got to keep him cool. Otherwise, he burn it up, he can get brain damage.
So, all right, let's fast forward here quite a ways. There's a raid on Johnny Tapia's house. Peter Stormare is murdered. And Gabrielle Union gets kidnapped to Cuba. So here's the whole thing. Here's where we are. The movie's over with. The drug ring has been foiled. Everything's fine. Oh, I'm sorry. You're not going to believe this. It's not a sequel. It's like an eighth of a sequel. Because we're going to start the next movie at the end of the second movie. We're going to Cuba for 45 minutes. This is the biggest fucking disaster of an ending to a movie I can recall. Like, I remember being in the theater, like, putting my coat on. Like, all right, Bad Boys 2, you weren't great, but whatever. Oh, I'm sorry. Wait, what? What's happening? Oh, do I have to put my coat off again? Oh, my God.
An international incident.
We're going to go join the Cuban resistance?
This is such fucking bullshit. Like, they don't get any help from the U.S. government because we don't negotiate with terrorists or hostage takers or, I guess, just flat-out communists that we have trade embargoes with at this point. Yeah. So, you know, they are going to man their own mission. Joe Pantoliano's got some buddies in the CIA.
It's a bunch of...
To arrest you for trying to do this? Yeah. That's what I would arrange.
Exactly. So we're going to Cuba, and all these people are helping out. All these dudes from the DEA who have, like, worked with Gabrielle Union are like, you know, we need to help get our best agent back with you
guys.
Henry
Rollins' boys are in there.
With no Henry Rollins, though, which I don't understand, like... Is there a deleted scene where his character retires?
Well, no. I want to see the scene where it's like they're like, "Yo, Henry Rollins going to Cuba." Gabriel Union is like, "I'm not. I'm staying home. There's
well,
a football
sounds,
game on."
That sounds tantamount to treason.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sit home and listen to some old Black Flag recordings.
That sounds like I'd be in a solo cell for the rest of my life.
Also, so when Martin Lawrence finds out that Johnny Tapia has indeed kidnapped his sister. He hangs up the phone and says, "Shit just got real."
Which is beautiful in Hot Fuzz.
Yes.
Where they go to that. That is unbelievable.
So we go to Cuba. It's a big old fucking covert mission. And it's basically a fucking full-on American organized assault on the nation of Cuba. Because there's fucking rocket launchers. There's all sorts of explosions going on. It's a siege on this guy's compound.
It's a reverse The Great Escape. They tunnel their way into his compound. They're using, like, iguanas and cats to set off motion detectors.
It's ridiculous.
It is fucking Dr. Seuss's raid on Cuba.
It's so stupid. It's like, it reminded me of the end of Commando, because you just, like, you got these two guys killing thousands of people.
Yeah.
Like, they're blowing up this building. They're shooting soldiers.
That's what's crazy, is at one point, one of the CIA dudes or whoever is like, "Hey, everybody, the Cuban military is here." And I'm like, "Oh, well, this just got really horrible." And then...
Well, I guess we should probably leave.
They just start murdering soldiers.
I tell you why, because some guy had the random throwaway line like, Tapia uses it for his own private military.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's the crazy thing is, according to this movie, Johnny Tapia's drug organization is funneling money to Fidel Castro himself.
With my cigar.
"You thought I was gone. I'm back for all of you."
Like, what the fuck?
That's communism. Everyone should need to try to work hard at a menial job like being a police officer so that you can get a Lamborghini like the rest of us.
And what a fucking mansion on the fucking water.
What these false hopes of capitalism that are shoved into this movie. It's just disgusting propaganda.
It honestly really is. It's also written by people who don't understand
money?
What's going on in Cuba.
Right,
But
the super privileged.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Will Smith is the exception to this because it's already set up. He's got a trust fund. But I mean, again, like to go back to Martin Lawrence's house, like just work really hard and you can have sports cars and a great house and whatever. It's like these dudes are on a city cop salary. I don't care that it's the extravagant city of Miami. You're still a city cop. You're getting paid diddly dick just like all the other cops in this country.
I mean, and, you know, you can. I'm not saying you can't own a home.
No.
Just not this home.
Yeah, the home from the first movie is like a kind of normal house.
Do they fucking like strike it big at the end of that movie? I haven't seen it in a while.
I don't think they get promoted. I mean, if they did, I mean, well, it kind of would play into this movie. Like if these guys were allowed to fucking get promoted. But
yeah.
Still, I don't think that happens. I think they're still just both detectives.
Yeah, they are. They're detectives in this movie still. So
it makes no sense. This movie, yes. Obviously, this movie is just a fantasy.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, obviously they're going to drive the cool cars and look at the most hot dead women.
Oh, look at all these sexy fucking dead pieces of ass. And then R.I.P.D.
Yeah, they'll lust over the dead daughters and then make a lot of dead sons.
Well, that's a dark subplot that this movie doesn't go to, is that like Mike Lowry's fetish is probably just like he's digging up like bodies of like famous like Hollywood like starlets. I just love a fucking just yep. a scene where he's digging up Anna Nicole Smith.
Marcus, guess what? This weekend, I'm going to have the Black Dahlia.
I'm bringing it home with me.
Oh, man. So, necrophilia, huh?
So eventually we got another car chase of them leaving this place now. And
after they've
being
killed
pursued.
Everybody but Johnny Tapia and his number two.
And they start driving down this hill, and they start literally blowing up a shanty town, a town full of poor people where... There's a throwaway line of like, yeah. Oh, this is where they make the drugs.
Exactly. That's exactly what I was about to say. That's why it's okay that they do this to these people, because this is where they make the filthy fucking drugs. So they deserve to just be blown up and have all their possessions destroyed and their families fucking
okay,
ruined.
Okay, so, okay, it's okay for me to go to Eastern Brooklyn and start blowing everything up. Okay.
This is where they make the... It's so fucking ridiculous because that they justify what they do here.
There's going to be, what, three or four labs in this entire shanty town that yeah. they're actually doing. You run over so many houses, yeah. women uh-huh. and children, dead.
Alien Gonzalez, dead. Younger listeners, Wikipedia.
Yeah, really? Janet Reno's watching this movie with her fingers crossed, like, come on, do it, do it, do it. It's a really shitty Janet Reno.
Yeah, it actually kind of sounds like her. It's a hefty broad.
They're like, hey, everybody, let's head to Guantanamo Bay, a nice safe haven.
That's actually the line of thought here. Oh, I can kill part of the Cuban military, commit countless atrocities, and then just drive up to Guantanamo Bay and just say, I'm an American.
Yep. That's it. And by the
all
way,
is
now,
forgiven.
I don't know if anybody, you know, we have a lot of listeners outside of the United States. So just so you know, if you're an American citizen, we have stuff that's beyond just regular IDs and passports. We actually have United States of America membership cards that you can do any kind of dumbass shit mm-hmm. wherever you want
well,
in the world.
I don't know. Are we supposed to be telling them about this?
Well, you know what? You know, I feel like it's time maybe kind of disseminate this information a little bit. All you got to do is flash your American membership card. You can do all sorts of fucking dumb shit like this wherever.
It
doesn't matter.
I mean,
it's true, actually.
I mean, it's going to be on Blu-ray soon. Check out the latest Die Hard for that shit.
Holy fucking shit. I'll tell you what. Someone on Twitter the other day was like, hey, any of you fellas see A Good Day to Die Hard? I go, I saw it in theaters, and guess what? It's my number one candidate for the worst of 2013 coming January 2014 to this
easily.
Show.
It is
because
holy
disastrous. Fucking Christ, that movie. But anyway, yeah, you can go around and be like, hey, by the way, you know, sorry, Cuba, I learned this from Bad Boys 2. I can fucking take a shit all over your country and then just flash my ID, and I'll be totally fine.
That is the moral of the story.
So, by the way, yeah, instead of starting World War III, which is what would happen because Cuba
absolutely.
Would be like, beep, boop, pop, pop. Oh, hello, China? Yeah, guess what totally just happened? Yeah, it's on. Then shit gets real.
And then Walmart would call up China. Boop, boop, boop. Actually, we need a bunch of units. Oh, well, let me talk to Cuba. See if I can sort this out.
Well, no, actually, they...
You're on your own, Cuba. I'm sorry. There's a big order.
It's really touch and go 13 days between America's Walmart and China.
Yes, 13 days. What a movie that was.
So we're on the beach in sunny Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, and the worst line of the movie happens here. So we're told by the American military here, you know, hey, be careful, you're standing on an active minefield. A lizard crawls over a mine and blows up. So Gabrielle Union, okay, they're doing a big, like, guns are on everybody, mm-hmm. and she's like, okay, fine, I'm going to put my gun down right next to this mine.
And she literally says that.
And here you go, listen.
Right next to the mine.
And then slow motion, this gun flies down, lands perfectly on this mine, blows up Johnny Tapia's number two.
You know what I think some of these shots are for, though? I'm putting myself in the head of Michael Bay.
Idiots.
In
they're for idiots.
A decade. Uh-huh. Watch this. In a decade.
Yes.
He's going to be like, guess what I'm going to put back out? Bad Boys 2 in 3D.
Oh, fucking stop.
Oh, my God.
Stop your noise.
It's like he's doing a Phantom Menace.
He's thinking ahead.
Yeah, because there are like those shots, like the bullet shots from the first scene, like that's a 3D shot. Like it goes straight at the screen and then through stuff.
I could see a bullet in three dimensions ripple through Martin Lawrence's buttocks.
Yep. Oh, and the blood.
Get ready for it. Whenever he gets Bad Boys 3 together, which I finally used correctly. They're going to re-release the first two, you know, and that second one's going to be in 3D. Yep. You're right. We're going to have 3D buttock blasting all over the place.
So that mine blows that guy up.
Oh, yeah. He's in pieces, huh?
Tapia's number two is gone.
And then there's some sort of other distraction that causes...
I think he just shoots at that point.
The explosion happens. Gabrielle Union jumps out of the way, and Martin Lawrence gets a shot off and kills Johnny Tapia. And again, it's another follow the bullet into his forehead, blammo.
This is the most ridiculous movie death outside of MacGruber. Because he gets shot in the head, you get the whole exit wound, you get to see all that beautiful stuff. And then
slow motion, of course, falling into the sand.
Of course, a little tribute to Sam Peckinpah.
I'm sure that's what Michael Bay will tell you.
5 minutes later, he hits the ground.
And he hits a mine, everyone. And then you get to see like part of his body explode. And it's all these little chunks everywhere and stuff.
Oh, yeah. It's just fucking pieces.
Will Smith gets a death boner.
Well, no. That's what's crazy is because finally, right, this whole movie, he's been like, you got to learn how to man up and kill somebody. There's a discussion they have where, you know, Will Smith is like, well, what would you have done? You should have, you know, killed that guy. And he's like, I would have shot him in the leg. And Will Smith's like disgusted to hear this. So this happens. And Will Smith says, like, that's how you shoot. Yeah, you fucking take a life.
And that's exactly the fucking line from the end of the fucking first one. That's how you drive.
Yep.
From now on, you drive.
They're doing all this in front of the U.S. Army at Guantanamo Bay.
Yeah, why isn't the military stepping in and being like, could you please stop using firearms on our minefield, by the way?
And then what would really happen here? The U.S. government wouldn't let them just come into the military base, right?
You don't have to. It doesn't matter because all we see is, I came all the way to Cuba for this, smooch. And then we're just hanging out in Martin Lawrence's pool. That's the end of the fucking movie.
No, there should have been like, they're just hanging. They're like congratulating themselves on all this death spree in Cuba. And then it's like the end of Blues Brothers, just like 1,000 military members with guns on them. And then that's it, you know?
Here's
jailhouse rap.
No. God damn it, you beat me to it, but that's fantastic.
No, it should be like the fucking end of goddamn Butch Cassidy and Sundance Kid, where the Cubans are just all around them.
Oh, yeah.
And they just all got the guns on them, and that's the realistic ending.
Raindrops are falling on my head, fade to black, and then just a
being
bunch of
shot
fucking
to
gun
death
fight.
By the Belize Army. That would have been good. I would have liked the movie way better if they had a Butch Cassidy Sundance Kid.
I mean, how great is that? Is this the end of Bad Boys? Yeah, it is, because you hear all sorts of fucking gunfire go off.
Because you just wrecked half a country.
I mean, it would be World War III. It is so goddamn preposterous. They act like they can just go in, do this, and Cuba has no way of communicating with the outside world. Like, that's what
an embargo means, apparently.
Yeah, all sorts of communication is completely cut off.
According to this movie, fucking, like, Castro was lying too on Tapia's phone. Yeah. Like, what do you need, Johnny?
You win this time, bad boys.
So yeah, we just cut to them in the pool, and Martin Lawrence is like, "You're lucky I threw out those, you know, transfer papers. I'll get them out of the garbage, all this shit." Will Smith has purchased them a new pool. This is what I don't understand. Okay, you're Will Smith. You feel bad that the $3,900 pool got ruined. So you're a trust fund dude. You have limitless money, right? You just buy another shitty above ground pool.
$3,900 pool.
You fucking pony up the cash and put in an in ground pool for this family.
Whatever it is, it's a drop in the bucket. A drop in the bucket for you.
Exactly. And then, of course, because we just love gags so much, but it's like, stop tying your dog to the pool filter. How about that for starters? Because again, the dog sees something and it's tied to this pool filter, knocks the pool down, and they fall into the canal again.
Well, that's
and
because,
we're just laughing our balls off.
Well, because I'm certain if you were to ask, like, fucking, you know how they ask filmmakers, like, what's your favorite movie?
Yeah.
Every once in a while, I'm guaranteeing you that Michael Bay is answering Beethoven.
I'm
certain of it.
No, Beethoven's second. Yeah. I think they needed a movie find themselves.
He's a big Debbie Mazar fan, so he wants that Beethoven second.
And then they're just singing Bad Boys in this canal, and that's the end
you
of the movie.
What they should call, like, because he might marry this DEA girl, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So they should call Bad Boys 3 Bad Brothers. We're finally Bad
Brothers.
Bad Brothers
in Law.
Bad Brothers in Law.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the end of the movie. I hope this third one's terrible. I don't even know when it's coming. I think it's like one of those, like,
it's
we might do
I
it.
Think.
Are they definitely doing it, though?
I mean, like,
I think it's
his
level.
Next project. And, like, he usually only takes 2 years.
Who, Michael Bay?
Yeah. The last Transformers was 2 years ago, and Panagains this year.
Uh-huh. Would anybody recommend this movie?
No. That's it for me.
I mean, it's a really weak recommend, like, but man, be in, like, a state. Be, like, really on something.
Corpse
some
pills?
Kind of, yeah, even corpse pills.
Be on
corpse X.
Ooh, corpsey.
But, like, yeah, it's just so fucking crazy. And, like, if you actually pay attention to it, what is going on here is so outlandishly nuts that I kind of have to give it. And I think it's by far, out of all of his movies, probably the craziest, and I approve of that.
I mean,
one movie, the world ended, or almost Armageddon.
But that's like not even half as weird as fucking.
Well, I mean,
Cuba.
Right? You're right.
Yeah, you're right. Trying to blow up an asteroid with a bunch of oil diggers is much more realistic.
Yeah, you know, it wouldn't be if those oil diggers in outer space came across a very sexy dead woman that they stared at for a while. I can't get over that scene. I'm sorry.
It's really disgusting.
Yo, that moon rock looks like boobs.
Let's have sex with it.
I
don't know. I mean, I guess it's a light recommend for me. It's like this is on HBO on a Sunday afternoon and I'm hungover kind of a movie. Because you don't have to pay attention to anything. And, like, all this high-octane action, you don't have to pay attention to. You can just kind of look and be like, eh. I mean, the thing about it is, like, we made fun of him a lot today because he's made a lot of bad movies. But, again, Michael Bay made The Rock. The Rock is a classic action film. I have the shitty Criterion DVD because I like it that much. Like, go watch The Rock again. I mean,
the shitty original printing fucking DVD, the one that came out when all the first DVDs came out.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I have that version because I like it so much.
The casting and the script were good, you know. Yep. I mean, Michael Bay is competent enough. I mean, the action sequences in this were fine. It's just they were ad nauseum. They just went on too far.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, no action movie has to be 2.5 hours. I'm sorry.
Yeah,
it just
I mean,
doesn't.
This is very much like it's not a hangover movie like the Twister is.
Right.
Because it's a little louder than that. So like a mild hangover.
Yeah, actually, that's a good call about the volume. You can't be too hungover. You got to be more like just like that tired hangover, not like a dehydration headache.
Maybe
hangover.
Stomach flu because of all the fucking camera movement.
You'll shit your pants.
You'll go right out.
So that's it. That's Bad Boys 2. We're going to roll on with our summer blockbuster extravaganza next week, of course. Still plenty of episodes on the way. This is only three of a bunch, so look forward to that. Until then, for more information about the show, if you want to get a hold of us, or more information about past episodes, check out the website, whmpodcast.com. Like us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter. We are at @WHMPodcast. Right into the mailbag, weallhatemovies@gmail.com. If you subscribe to the show in iTunes, rate and review there if you could. That would be appreciated by us. It helps increase the profile of this program in the iTunes store. You can also find us on Stitcher. You can download the Stitcher radio app and stream the most recent five episodes of the show on the go. Eric's program, Blame It on Outer Space, the first Wednesday of every month, a new conspiracy theory or paranormal tale is brought down in comedic fashion. They're over at blameitonouterspace.com. They're on Facebook. They're on Twitter at @BlameSpacePod. And you can also check them out on iTunes and Stitcher. And Chris's writing for Slant Magazine and The House Next Door can be found at slant.com. So we'll see you next week. Until then, I'm Andrew Jupin.
Eric Siska.
Chris Cabin.
Take it easy.